Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Bad things happen in the world every day, and because we are more connected to the world than ever before, we can feel bombarded by bad news. Unfortunately, we adults aren't the only ones exposed to tragedies like mass shootings, floods, fires, wars. Children are too. Parents often struggle with what to tell their children about these events. Some choose to say nothing at all, but because kids don't live in a vacuum, they're likely to hear about these things, and in the absence of a thoughtful explanation, may become more fearful of the world than they really need to be. Okay, so what do you say to your kids about events that even you may have trouble wrapping your head around? How much do you say? How do you make your explanation age-appropriate? For help with those questions and more, we welcome Dr. David Schoenfeld, a developmental behavioral pediatrician and director of the National Center for School Crisis and Bereavement at the University of Southern California. But he joins us this morning from Florida. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And also with us is Dr. Robin Gerwich, psychologist and professor in the Duke University Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, and part of the National Child Traumatic Stress Network. She joins us this morning from Chicago. Thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. Both of you deal with children. Both of you have studied and written extensively about and worked with individuals as the result of trauma. But trauma can be anything from a mass shooting to a flood or a fire in which you lost your home to a child's grandmother dying. From your experience, and I'll begin with Dr. Schoenfeld, but I want to hear from both of you. From your experience, do most people do an adequate job of explaining these things to kids or to addressing their concerns about these things?
Well, first off, it's a very difficult task. So when you say adequate, I think people do a very good job of letting their children know that they care about them and they're there to support them. I think we could all do a better job of figuring out how to communicate openly with children about difficult topics.
Same question, Dr. Gerwich, and do normal people have the tools?
I think that's a great question. I think on the whole, the good news is that most families do fairly well just because they can rely on each other. But certainly, the scariest day of my life was when they gave me my daughter and said, good luck. Children don't come with manuals. And so if we can provide families and other caregivers, educators with tools, I think it makes it much better in the long run.
So, Dr. Schoenfeld, when a parent doesn't do a good job of explaining or dealing with a child's concerns or fears about whatever may have happened in the world or in their world in the last 24 hours, what is the main reason that they don't? And when they don't, how does that affect the child?
Well, I think the main problem that I see is a lot of parents and other adults as well are afraid they're going to say the wrong thing and upset children further or worry them. So they say nothing at all. I think the sense is if you don't know what to say, it's better to say nothing. But actually, that's probably the worst thing to do because it leaves children alone trying to figure out what's happened and to cope with it. And so saying nothing to children often is interpreted as the adult doesn't know what's going on, doesn't understand what's going on, is unwilling or unable to be of assistance, and it just leaves children confused and trying to cope, often with misinformation and incomplete information.
Do you wait for the child to ask questions about a certain event, or are you proactive about this and start talking about it on your own?
I think if the information is widely known in the media, there's a very good chance that children will have heard about it or be aware. I worked with Aurora after the shooting in the movie theater, and I was working with the school system, and we were planning for the first day back to school. And the shooting had happened during the summer, so they had a couple of weeks to prepare. And there was some discussion about how we were going to start the first day at school by talking with children about what happened and about the resources available in the school, including the teacher, who could talk to the children about their concerns. And the question came up at what grade level to start. And I had suggested that since it was a shooting during the Batman movie, that even kindergartners would have heard about it in that community. And one of the staff later spoke with me, and she said that her child was about to start kindergarten, and she had actually not told her child anything about it. They turned off the television and the radio, never had conversations when the child was present, and she felt that that was really the right thing to do. And then over dinner, she had suggested going to see a Disney film, and the child had just said, "We shouldn't go to a movie theater. There's people there murdering people." And she asked how he found out, and he had found out during a swimming lesson in the pool. Another child had, you know, mentioned it while they were swimming. And she looked at me and she said, "You know, it's bad enough that he didn't tell me this, but he didn't talk to me because I didn't talk to him." Hmm. And so I think that you deliver the message that these are inappropriate conversations when you don't have those conversations with children. And you really want to let them know if there's anything that worries them, you're there to give them accurate information, to listen to them, and to be with them and support them.
So bad news travels even among six-year-olds, even if they don't have access to radio or television and can't read the newspaper yet. Go ahead, Dr. Gerwich.
Yeah, I just to follow up on what Dr. Schoenfeld had said, I think we know more as we study this in science. There is great research after the Boston Marathon bombing, showing that families that truly try to shield their children from discussions of what happened, the children were actually more anxious and worried than families that did discuss it with their children. And so your question about do we bring it up, I think it's always good to bring it up. You can bring it up very easily by just a generic statement. There was recently a shooting at, sadly fill in the blank, and some people died and some people were hurt. Tell me what you've heard. Because that allows you to hear where they're starting from. Because many children may have very different understandings of what happened, some of it true, some of it inaccurate, and it provides adults an opportunity to gently correct inaccurate misinformation or to talk about rumors. But as Dr. Schoenfeld said, they take in information in ways we never would expect. And if we don't start that conversation, the idea is maybe they're so upset or maybe they don't know. And it changes the likelihood for children to talk to their parents or teens to talk to their parents about other challenging topics as well. So it really can set up an opportunity for more open discussions across topics, not just about violence.
Yeah, there are many different kinds of trauma in a person's life and certainly in a child's life. It could be within the family. It could be outside the family. It could be in the news. It could be among other children in their classroom that they just happen to hear about troubles in their world. So, Dr. Gerwich, which is worse, and of the various different traumas, from mass shootings to the death of a pet, for that matter, which is worse for the child? Is it strictly dependent upon the individual, or does that even matter? Trauma is trauma.
I think trying to rank order trauma gets us a little bit in trouble. So we have to recognize that different events will affect children in slightly different ways. And as much as I love Kelly Clarkson's music, she got it wrong. The more traumas you're exposed to doesn't make you stronger. What we know is the more challenges that you face, the harder it is and the more at risk you are. So take a child in North Carolina, for example, that lived on the coast, and perhaps they are being bullied at school, and then the grandmother that lives with them passes away, and then their pet gets sick and dies, and then they're in Wilmington and the hurricane comes. So is one worse than the other? They're cumulative. And so all of those begin to impact the child. And so how do we make sure that that child has the support, the information, and the care that they need from the adults that are important in that child's life?
Both of you have been studying and working in this field for a long time. Dr. Gerwitch, you focused your work on improving traumatic outcomes and increasing resilience in children since the Oklahoma City bombings in 1995. And Dr. Schoenfeld, I'm not sure when you started, but you've already referenced Aurora, and I know that you were heavily involved in helping the New York City Department of Education following the September 11th attacks. What fears, what concerns are elevated in kids following events like those attacks and the Aurora shooting and the Parkland shooting, Dr. Schoenfeld?
So I think what you will find with children is that they'll have a fear of something similar happening again. So if they've been through a shooting, they may be concerned about violence again. But they may also be concerned about other things happening. In the bereavement field, we call it the loss of the assumptive world. There's certain assumptions that we make every day that allow us to get up and go through our day without worrying that we may get hit by a car when we're driving to work or to school, or that we might be injured in some other way. But what happens is when these events occur, it forces us to realize that a lot of these are assumptions, and so therefore it makes us feel vulnerable. So even if you weren't in Aurora when the shooting happened in Aurora, you start to realize I could be at a movie theater, I could be at a restaurant, I could be at a mall. Tragedy can happen at any point to those that I care about, and it leaves you feeling very vulnerable. So you may find children will even worry about the health of their family member who has an illness such as cancer. When these events occur, it uncovers a lot of our other concerns and worries.
Adults have a sense, I think, of the randomness. That's one of the troubling things about these events. You don't feel safe anywhere because these things don't seem to have any pattern to them. They're just random events pulled off by people who are not, I don't know, they're not mentally ill necessarily, but they're troublemakers. So do children have the understanding of the randomness that just because something happens in a classroom or in a school in Florida doesn't mean it's going to happen to your classroom?
I think the issue is that it is unsettling to children as it is to adults. And children and adults will try and be able to predict in order to feel safe. So there are a couple things that people may do that may not seem logical to others. They want to have some sense of how they can stay safe. So they may actually give themselves the illusion of control. Either they feel that they did something wrong that allowed this to happen, and then they'll feel guilty, but that gives them an illusion. If only I'm a more worthy individual, God would not allow this to happen to me. If only I were more careful or cautious. So they start to think about what they could have done to have prevented this if they were involved directly in that event. They may also start to shift blame to other people. If only the leadership at the school was more competent, this wouldn't have occurred. If only we had this in place, you know, so that they will often either have a guilt or anger as a way of trying to make it appear not random, to make it appear to them as something that is predictable and therefore preventable. But that guilt and that anger does not actually help with the coping and healing, and introduces a lot of behaviors that ultimately are not as useful to people.
I have about 30 seconds left. Do you want to chime in on that, Dr. Gerwitch?
Yeah, I think what we need to recognize is a recent poll came out showing that for school children, school shootings was the second greatest worry that they had. And so given that, we have to appreciate that while particularly older children may understand, teens may understand the randomness, whether they're in kindergarten or seniors in high school, that is a big worry that children face today.
Dr. Robin Gerwitch is a professor and psychiatrist in the Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences Department at Duke University. Dr. David Schoenfeld, director of the National Center for School Crisis and Bereavement at the University of Southern California. We're coming right back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. David Schoenfeld joins us from Florida. He's the director of the National Center for School Crisis and Bereavement at the University of Southern California and a developmental behavioral pediatrician. Dr. Robin Gerwich is with us from Chicago. She's professor and a psychiatrist or psychologist in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Duke University's Center for Child and Family Health and a part of the National Child Traumatic Stress Network. I'll start with you on this segment, Dr. Gerwich. And there are all kinds of events that go on in the world, some that we maybe as adults think of as serious, some that we don't think is serious, but that doesn't necessarily tell us how a child views these events, someone with less experience in the world than we do, whether they happen outside the home or inside the home. So how do you know what sort of events should be talked about with children? How do you know that they're aware of these events or worrying about them? Because if they're not aware and not worrying, why bring it up?
It would be great to think about the don't ask, don't say anything idea. But we live in a world, as you mentioned in the beginning of this program, we live in a world where children, whether it's through social media, through friends, through just walking through a grocery store and seeing pictures on the headlines, that children know more about the world going on around them. We see events taking place live. So I think as adults, we also have to shift our understanding and our discussion if we can think of ways to create children that feel more safe and secure. We know that there are going to be hurricanes and there are going to be communities around our country that are going to be impacted by those. So can we take proactive stances? Can we think about what's our safety plan to reduce some of the worry and concerns that children may have? Is there going to be another hurricane that devastates North Carolina as we had recently? We can also think about talking to children and thinking about some of these moments as windows of opportunity. And I know that sounds strange when a horrific event has occurred, a tragedy like Las Vegas or Dayton or El Paso or many of these others, Sandy Hook. Can we think about them as some windows of opportunity to talk to our children about what are our values and beliefs about the world around us, about the people living in the world around us, that it's an opportunity to talk to children about how do we treat others, how do we stand up, and how do we talk to those caregivers in their lives to let them know that I'm here, I'm willing to listen. It is my job to do everything I can to help you feel safe, and that's going to be what I do. And together we're going to figure out anything that creates worries or insecurities, that how do we help move forward so that I can cope with what life, whether it's a tragedy or a trauma or things that are just challenging for children and create some anxiety and worry.
And Dr. Schoenfeld, I know that this is probably an age-appropriate question, but sometimes people try to shield their children from, particularly after the initial event, they don't want them to watch the replays on television of horrific events over and over and over again, because that could have a psychological impact, and they don't understand that these are replays. It's not another event happening. But as a result of some of these school shootings, we are now incorporating lockdowns and lockdown drills and other kinds of active shooter drills into the school day. What impact does that have? I mean, these are not the same things as fire drills.
No, they're not. And I do think the impact is more widespread than a lot of adults appreciate. The first thing is I think we have to do lockdown drills when we do them in a way that's responsible and appropriate for children. So one of the things that has occurred, I'm hoping it's quite rare, is that deception has been used in some of these drills where the kids are not told that they are drills and neither are the adults. And they're actually led to believe there's an active shooter in the school. The thinking being that people will respond more like they would in a real event if they thought it were a real event, and that might in some way better prepare the school and members of the school. We think that's inappropriate and can be highly traumatizing to children and adults. So at the very least, we feel that there needs to be discussion about this and openness about the fact that it is a drill. I'm also concerned about some of what we refer to as high-intensity drills, where they use gunshots, where they have makeup to try and make people look like they're bleeding, where there's very aggressive acting on the part of the active shooter. And we also question that that's really necessary and very likely to cause emotional distress in children, even if they are aware it's a drill. So, you know, I remember right after 9/11, I lived in a community near New York City, and I remember my daughter telling me that they had a lockdown drill at their school, and that she was in a closet for about a half an hour with her class in art. And so she mentioned to me that she had made a joke, and I said to her, "You really should not be joking during these things. They're quite serious." And she looked at me and she said, "Dad, I know it's serious. That's why I made the joke. There were kids getting very upset." And then she looked at me and she said, can you imagine being in a closet with my art teacher for 30 minutes? So, I mean, the point is that the kids do know what this means, and it can be very overwhelming for them. So I do think we have to think about how to support them and prepare them. We also have to try and identify those children who, based on their experiences or pre-existing anxiety or post-traumatic stress disorder for something else, may be at increased vulnerability, and make sure that we provide even more support for them for those experiences.
When these things happen, whether it's a shooting, a mass shooting, or whether it's a hurricane or floods, the media covers this stuff wall to wall. And many parents' reaction is the incident happens, then they immediately turn off the TV and the radio to try to shield their children from seeing these things, Dr. Gerwich. Is that the right move? Or is letting them see the, because you're not actually watching the shooting, you're watching the aftermath of the shooting. When you have a meteorologist standing out in the middle of 80-mile-per-hour winds in a hurricane saying, "Don't come out here, it's dangerous," and a hurricane is brewing, is that something to shield your children from, or is it an opportunity for them to experience the world with you as the explainer?
I think when we talk about children and the media, recognizing that there really is a developmental approach that we need to take. For very young children, as you alluded to before, they don't really appreciate instant replay. And so for very young children, while I still think it may be important to discuss the event, sparing gruesome details, the TV should be off. For as children get older, they're watching it, and it makes sense that if you watch it together, turn it off, talk about it. What did you think about that? What are your friends saying about this event? Sometimes kids that don't want to talk about it are more likely to share with you what their friends are saying, right? That we have friends because they think the way we do. So talking about what they see, turning it off and having that conversation can be really useful, particularly as children get older. Sadly, it is not anymore just a replay of what happened. We have been privy to events as they have unfolded in communities, in schools, because of social media and coverage that you can see things happening. And I do want to truly echo what Dr. Schoenfeld said. I'm going to take us back just a second to the lockdown drills. There is very good guidance. The National Child Traumatic Stress Network has wonderful guidance, the National Association for School Psychologists, of how to run drills so they don't create more trauma, because they can be very, very upsetting, not only to the students, but to the staff, to parents. And we have to think about not only, as Dr. Schoenfeld wonderfully alluded to, the children that have prior traumatic experiences or other losses, but also children with disabilities and challenges. How do we help prepare them for these drills? How do we incorporate them? I recently was talking with a family, and they were going school shopping, and mom wanted to buy light up shoes because she knew how much her daughter loved little light up shoes. And her daughter said, I can't have light up shoes because they may sparkle and they may flash and a shooter would see me. And so our children have, their worries have changed. And whether it's watching television and discussing what you see with them, whether it's discussing a drill that they may have upcoming or experienced at school, or whether it's discussing an event that happened in the world around them, we really need to be having these conversations if we want the best outcome for our children, no matter the age.
Robin Gurwitch is a professor and psychologist at the Duke University Psychiatry Behavioral Sciences Department. Dr. David Schoenfeld is director of the National Center for School Crisis and Bereavement at the University of Southern California. I think both of you agree that not talking to kids is the biggest mistake that is made in these situations. But Dr. Schoenfeld, what happens when you don't discuss this? Either when the child doesn't ask you because they're reading signals, they know what's gone on, you haven't said anything, therefore, this is something we don't talk about. Or you just don't bring it up, or you discourage conversation about it. What's the impact on the child of not talking about it?
Well, I remember my daughter was in fourth grade on 9/11, and she was in a school that was K to four, and the school decided not to tell anyone what happened that day. And that's despite the fact that we were in a community very close to New York City. In fact, her friend's mother commuted to the World Trade Center. And so she came home from school not knowing what had happened, and she was told by her older sister while they were home alone after school. And when I got home, she explained to me that she knew something had occurred. She said the teachers were hugging each other. I knew there was a problem. I just didn't know what it was. And that's a very frightening position for a child to be in, to know that there's something very scary going on and people won't tell you. And she looked at me and she said, I guess it makes them uncomfortable. I will never talk about it in school. And despite the fact that the school, she had a wonderful teacher who was extremely supportive that she could discuss anything with. It was actually the second year she had that teacher. Despite that, she just looked at me and she said, it makes them uncomfortable and I would never want to do that. So I will never talk about it. And she never did in school. And I told her that she needed to talk about it. And she looked at me and she said, well, I can talk to you and mom. And that's really all I need. I'm fine. And I think it probably was okay for her not to talk about it in school. But I think that delivers a really bad message to children. And it also makes school seem irrelevant to them and the adults in the school not present for them for the things that matter most.
You call, I believe I'm right when I say this, Dr. Gurwitch, you call this talk therapy. Is that right?
No, but I can talk about that.
Well, I was under the impression that talk therapy is at the top of your list for parents to engage in with their children. But go ahead and talk about both sides of that.
Sure. I think discussion is critical. And if we call it talk therapy, you know, I can be on board with that. It just has different ideas. But honest to goodness, I think we really do need to make sure that we are open to having these conversations. What we know from science is that when we do not talk to children about these events, when we do not provide them with coping skills, when we do not support their resilience and their own coping, children become more anxious. The likelihood of depression goes up. The likelihood for behavioral challenges get worse. And any pre-existing conditions usually are exacerbated. So it is critical. And if you can talk to them about these world events, it also sets up a precedent that if I'm being bullied, I can talk to you. If I'm having peer pressure, I can talk to you. If I'm concerned about a fellow classmate doing something, I can talk to you. It is really setting the stage for how do we talk. So I'll go with talk therapy. How do we talk to our children to set up that idea that you can talk to me about anything? And you know what? Sometimes as parents, the answer is, I don't know, but I'll find out. I'm going to check back in with you. And that's the important thing. It's not a one and done. It's a one and continued checking in, seeing how they're doing, supporting them. Because as adults, we're also distressed by these events. we may be more anxious, we may be more fearful, we may be more worried, but how do I share with my child, this is how I'm feeling too, but I believe that there are things we can do to be able to handle it. And this is what we can do in our family, this is what we can do together. And so you're really building a sense of family support, you're building a sense of security and planfulness for how we move forward. The good news is, in spite of not having a manual, we do know what kind of reactions children at all ages may have when they are stressed, whether it's from trauma, whether it is from loss and bereavement. We know some of the things to look for, and there are wonderful interventions when family support, community support, and school support are not enough, so that we can be, we can rest assured that if we need help, it is available and it can make the biggest difference in the outcomes.
Lee, one of our listeners communicating with us on WFAE.org, writes, simple. There are bad people out there that do bad things. There always have been. There always will be. You tell a child that they need to be on the good side of things and then set an example for them. If you explain it to them, they can start to understand these tragedies on a factual basis at an earlier age. They will also understand that there are people out there to protect them, and they can protect themselves from bad people by being smart. Assuming that you agree with that, Dr. Schoenfeld, how young is too young to talk to a child?
Well, first off, I do agree. I think there were a lot of good points in that message. In terms of when is it too young, my answer is I don't know that it's ever too young. Certainly, children may not understand some of what you say. They grow into an understanding. We have to give them the language and start to talk with them in order for them to learn and understand. So we talk to and narrate things with infants when we know they don't understand it. We may be changing their diaper and talk about what we're doing and what's happening during the day. We know they don't comprehend all of that, but they start to hear the language, and they're comforted by the fact that we're talking to them.
But over should you probe your child for what they already know about this, so you don't give them too much information or information that they don't necessarily need to hear or what might even frighten them even more? How should you approach these conversations?
Sure. I think, as Dr. Gerwich had said, you want to start by asking them what they've heard and what they already understand and what questions they have. I think it's not so much that we need to tell children as much as we need to talk to them, which means that we need to start by listening to them. I would also add that it isn't useful for adults to have all the information that's available either. There's a lot of very specific and graphic information and visual images that are available, whether they're online.
Let me stop you there because we have to go to a break. We'll come back with more in a moment at Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The political world has its attention elsewhere at the moment.
Hello, Iowa.
Thank you, New Hampshire.
But local offices with more of a day-to-day impact on Charlottesians are about to be on the ballot.
The Charlotte City Council meeting has now been called to order.
7 Democrats are running in next month's primary for City Council at large. Join Charlotte Talks for a live forum with the candidates Wednesday, August 28th at 7 p.m. at Spirit Square's McGlowan Theater. Registration and more details at WFAE.org. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking today about how to talk to kids about traumatic events, be they national or within your own family, with Dr. Robin Gerwich, who is a professor and psychologist in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Duke University and part of the National Child Traumatic Stress Network. Dr. David Schoenfeld is director of the National Center for School Crisis and Bereavement at the University of Southern California and a developmental behavioral pediatrician. I wanted to give you a chance to finish your thought, Dr. Schoenfeld, because I had to interrupt you for the break.
Well, certainly. So what I was saying is that there's a lot of information that's available, whether it's through social media, the internet, or on national media, that has either graphic images or a lot of details about an event that's occurred that isn't even helpful for adults to watch. I always tell adults, you know, listen to trusted sources of media, such as NPR, when an event has occurred to get information so that you know what has occurred. And you also know what you should be doing, whether that's something to keep yourself safer because of the event is in your area, or something you might do to help others, whether it's donating blood or providing other assistance. Once you have actually understood what's occurred and know what you need to do, that's actually a time to turn off the media. If you're still listening, you're still watching, you're still hearing ongoing coverage, but you're not learning anything new, and it's not giving you any sense of what to do to help, then it's really a time to just turn all of that off, spend time with those you love. It's really a time to be with other people. And so it's not just about overexposing children, it's overexposing adults, and then that breeds anxiety and concerns in the adults, which they transmit to the children in turn.
Following violent public events, you often see in the media pictures of people going to these vigils, laying flowers and other commemorative items where the event took place. And many times you'll see parents taking their children to these places. Dr. Gerwich, is that a good idea? Is that a healing experience? Is that a way for the child to see the good in this, if there is any good to come out of these things?
Again, I think when we talk about all those kinds of events that surround a tragedy, it gives an opportunity for adults important in a child's life to have those conversations, to explain, this is why we're going to the vigil. This is how I see the world. This is what I believe. How do we stand up? How do we express kindness? How do we express sympathy and support? So I think it's not just attending these vigils if parents want to take their children, but it's also helping children understand what this is all about. Oftentimes after these events, we look for ways to make meaning. Is there something we can do that helps and supports the healing of a community or helps or supports me? For example, we see this happening many times after one of these tragedies that foundations or activism or other things stand up. Oftentimes it's for meaning making of from a tragedy what can result. So taking children to these memorials, taking them to vigils, must be accompanied by a conversation about the whys of what we're doing, and then talking to them about what that was like, and making sure that if they are showing signs of distress, that we focus on that as well and allow them to leave that situation.
Is pointing out the firemen, the policemen, even civilians who spring into action to help something that children find comforting, a way of believing perhaps that grown-ups have a plan for these things, and that helps in all these situations? There's a plan there.
I think, you know, as Mr. Rogers said, we always look to the heroes, right? And heroes come in many different shapes and sizes, and sometimes even that word can be charged. There are individuals in every one of these situations that step up and show, as you said before, as Dr. Schoenfeld alluded to, there is goodness in the people around them. And so allowing them to know, depending on the age, I think that also changes. What are our jobs? What can we do? So we're not just passive participants, but we can be active as well. Knowing what the school's plans are, knowing what my job is as a student to support each other, knowing who to turn to in schools, letting teachers be equipped with skills of how to support students. But also in the communities, there's so many different people that can help in the aftermath of these tragedies, and making sure that we recognize those support systems, whether it's first responders, clergy, ethnic and cultural center staff, caregivers, coaches, and dance instructors. How do we make sure that we can best support children and give them the message that we hope, that I hope anyway, that the world as a whole has kind individuals in it and good people that far outnumber those that wish to do harm.
A lot of these events, Dr. Schoenfeld, are incomprehensible. Adults can't wrap their own heads around what's going on or why it's going on. They just can't fathom what is happening in the world around them. So how are they going to be able to talk to their children about this? What do they say when they can't get their own head around it?
Well, we often use the analogy that the first thing you need to do, you know, if you're in an aircraft and the oxygen mask descend, the first thing you need to do is put it on the adult first before you help your child. But and so I think people think they need to be able to understand all of this and process all of it and be okay about it before they start to reach out to assist their child. But if you actually look at the directions on planes, which I've had the opportunity to do, some of the instruction sheets actually have put a clock to explain you have 2 to 3 seconds to reach out to the child and put the mask on after you put it on yourself first. We can't wait until we're okay with all of this before we start to reach out to our child. That wouldn't be safe. So children will ask us questions that we don't know the answers to. Sometimes the questions are just rhetorical. When children ask, why did so-and-so die, they may be just saying, it's sad, it's unfair, I'm in distress. And really what they want is a hug or your sympathy. They're not looking for an explanation all of the time. So I think we have to talk about the things that are difficult. We can't just talk about the things that are easy to talk about. The fact that we can't wrap our heads around it is part of what we need to talk about with children, particularly as they get older, is that you won't always understand everything, but this is the meaning that we've been able to develop so far.
You also say, let the child own their feelings. What does that mean?
Well, I think if children say they're upset or that they're worried, a lot of times we try and reassure them. And as Dr. Gerwich said, yes, we do need to tell them about what we're doing to keep them safe, to tell them about the people that are helpers. I completely agree with that. But they may still be worried. And we shouldn't ever say to them, you know, you shouldn't be worried. They have a right to their feeling. If they're scared, they're scared. And we need to then help them figure out, okay, what do you do with those worried feelings? How do you cope? And so I think we have to let them own that they have these feelings and not tell them that they're illegitimate or that they shouldn't have them, but instead
Absolutely.
Tell them about how to deal with them.
Dr. Gerwich?
I could not agree with Dr. Schoenfeld more. I think it is critical. I had someone once say to me, well, that's an unrealistic idea or feeling. You should just tell them, don't think that way. And I thought, wow, I went to graduate school and all I had to do was say, don't feel that way and life would be better. We have our feelings, they have theirs, and sometimes their distress, we try to talk them out of it because the distress is upsetting to us, and we have to be able to hear where they are, validate their experiences, provide them with some coping ideas and some coping skills, as well as think about what we're doing to take care of ourselves. So I think it would be a great wish and hope that I could just say, don't feel that way, or it will be okay, and all of a sudden the worry will disappear, but that's rarely the case. It's the actions that go with it. What do we see? How do we get support? So I totally agree with Dr. Schoenfeld. We have to validate our children's experiences and feelings, but we need to be mindful. Sometimes if we hear things such as hate-filled talk, we do need to step in and think about what is the message we want our children to have, what can they do, how do we help them address those ideas in times of tragedy.
Each of us has our own coping mechanisms, but young people don't necessarily have all the tools yet in their toolkit to cope. Children act out in times of stress. What signs, Dr. Gerwich, can a parent look for or recognize in their child that might indicate that they are acting out as a coping mechanism for an event that has frightened or troubled them, that hasn't been discussed, or that maybe has been discussed, but this is how they are dealing with it? How do these things manifest themselves in children at various ages?
Sure. I think what we see at various ages, you know, we look at school, for example. Are did you see a change in grades? Did you suddenly see a drop in grades or difficulty retaining new information at home? Are we seeing chores that they normally do that they seem to have forgotten or are pushing back on? They love visiting with their friends or playing soccer. Now all of a sudden they want to stay home. So we're really looking at changes in behavior. Are we seeing more visits to the school nurse for headaches and stomach aches that aren't related to the flu? Do we see problems with attention and focus and concentration? We've become so focused on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder when we hear things like problems concentrating and problems attending or finishing work, that we also need to remember that those are signs of children being stressed or children that have experienced a trauma or a loss. And so there are good guidelines available to help parents recognize signs and reactions at different ages. If you don't know, honestly, there are so many resources. Or reach out to your local mental health association. There's guidance at the National Child Traumatic Stress Network, because sometimes just gathering information to look. But bottom line, if a caregiver is worried about their child, ask someone, reach out and see, because they didn't come with the manual. Finding out gives us a better way to pay attention to what kinds of changes we may see. Sleep changes, is that okay or not okay? Reach out and ask. It only helps with gathering information.
Dr. Schoenfeld, some of these violent events happen now so frequently in America that some people are calling this part of our new normal. And you stress that there is nothing about these things that is normal, and calling it normal is destructive. How so?
Well, I remember being in a community known for its school violence and community violence. And I was talking to the staff at the school, and one of the staff said, it's normal here for children to be in gangs. And then he said, it's normal here for children to murder other children. And I just looked at him and I said, it's never normal for children to murder other children. And once we call it normal, it means we don't have to try and do anything about that. So to me, it's more, we shouldn't as society be complacent with this. It isn't normal for children to be murdered in school. These events, we should see them as highly abnormal. It may be, unfortunately, not as uncommon as it should be, but I really think we have to, as a society and as individuals, do whatever we can to try and prevent these events, not just accept them as a new normal.
You work behind the scenes in local communities with school districts all over the country, Dr. Schoenfeld, and I know that you believe that teachers need to be trained in dealing with bereavement in children, but few are trained to do so, and you wonder why they aren't getting that training before they go into the classroom. Why aren't they?
I think they aren't getting the training, and some of that is changing, by the way. I think there's a new openness to try and help teachers better be able to deal with the social and emotional needs of the students, part of the teaching the whole child movement. But I think they don't get the training because there isn't a lot of curricula developed in that area, and a lot of the teachers aren't comfortable. So we know that only 3% of schools offer and districts offer any training on this, and only 7% of classroom educators reported that they had ever received a single lecture on this. So we have materials that were developed through the Coalition to Support Grieving Students at grievingstudents.org that provides free training materials, video-based modules, and print materials on how to support grieving children. And we hope more schools and more districts and more teachers will become better prepared in this area.
So I have less than a minute left. And Dr. Gerwich, we have an email from a school nurse who says about 25% of her students are undocumented, and that's causing anxiety because of what's going on in the news and with the roundups, et cetera. Incorporating that, can you summarize how parents should handle traumatic events that children have experienced, seen on the news, heard, or discussed around them in 30 seconds or less?
Wow, in 30 seconds or less. I think we need to make sure that we talk to our children. The nurse brings up a new issue that we must address, and to talk to children about who they can talk to, who is there for them. If I am not home, who do you talk to? Where do you go? Having that plan becomes incredibly important because these children are presenting with increased anxiety, and you can't just say, don't worry about it. You really do have to have a plan. And so to summarize in my 30 seconds or less, making sure that you've talked to your children, making sure they know they're supported, making sure there's a plan.
Dr. Robin Gurwitch is professor and a psychologist in the Department of Behavioral Sciences and Psychiatry at Duke University. Dr. David Schoenfeld is director of the National Center for School Crisis and Bereavement at the University of Southern California. Thank you both. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.